This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, April 6, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster, only working from my home office in New York. We got big news last night on ESPN. Coors Field is going to be the site of the 2021 Major League Baseball All-Star Game and Home Run Derby. And of course, Denver will be the site of the 2021 draft. The last time that the All-Star Game was in Colorado was in 1998. Already a lot of folks on social media looking forward to the Home Run Derby, with hitters taking advantage of the conditions there. There's obviously a lot of conversation about the All-Star Game moved out of Atlanta, now being moved into Colorado. We're going to be talking with Jessica Mendoza about that. Texas Governor Greg Abbott backed out of throwing the first pitch for the Rangers game when they opened their season at home because of this All-Star Game move. His quote was that he sent out on Twitter, "It is shameful that America's pastime is being influenced by partisan politics." I'd say generally in response, it's a shame that voting is being shaped by partisan politics. Nicholas Castellanos got a 2-game suspension for starting that confrontation and bench-clearing brawl with the Cardinals over the weekend. Taylor, we talked about this yesterday. That was one of the most polite fights ever. I kind of wonder if it would have been better. Just give him a game. But it didn't look like he kind of pushed things forward after that initial that he gave to the pitcher.
Yeah, I don't like the suspension at all. I think it's lame. I mean, one game would have been fine. I feel like that's a little too heavy-handed. It's weird to say that about a 2-game suspension, but you're right. It was a polite fight. Let's move on, everyone.
All right, Mets owner Steve Cohen talked to reporters on Monday after the Mets formally announced their 10-year, $341 million deal with Francisco Lindor. His quote to reporters, "They told you I'm all in, and this should leave no doubt. Once we get to the playoffs, anything can happen, right? I'm really optimistic." There's something, and this is me talking now, there's something really interesting about Lindor's contract, and we're going to be talking with Sarah Langs about that coming up. Last night, Mets played the Phillies. Jacob DeGrom was living at 100 to 102 miles per hour. He's throwing the heck out of the ball, left after 6 innings with a lead, but then the Phillies came back. And then in the 9th inning, the Mets rallied. They had a couple runners on base. Pete Alonso at the plate, and here's what happened.
Out to right field. Harper's going back toward the scoreboard. He's got room, and he makes the catch, and the ball game is over.
Tom McCarthy on the Phillies Television Network. Taylor, going to bring in again. We talked yesterday in the podcast about whether or not there's a mush ball in play in 2021. That plate appearance was more evidence for me, based on the swing from Pete Alonso, who you know is incredibly strong, the trajectory off the bat, and just to see it die before it even got close to the fence is pretty remarkable.
Buster, if I can see that these balls are dying, then they got a problem, because I notice nothing in these games. And yeah, it's an issue. Saw it multiple times in the Orioles games this weekend.
I don't know if it's an issue, you know, and we're going to be talking with Jess about that coming up. But I also want to make clear that's what we're seeing. The ball is certainly not traveling as far unless Giancarlo Stanton's hitting it. This is what happened in the Yankee game.
Driven deep to left center field. There it goes. See ya. A monster grand slam for Stanton. And the Yankees lead 6-0.
Michael Kay on the Yes Network selling it. Well, he didn't need to sell it because it was 471 feet, as Michael said. He absolutely hit a monster home run. What a play in Fenway Park made by one of the Rays.
The pitch here is lined toward right center field. This could be trouble. Rosarena jumps up and makes the catch. Oh, my. Flying through the air, Rosarena takes away extra bases. Tagging at third and scoring is Vasquez. But what a catch by Randy Rosarena out there in right center field.
That from 620 WDA. Yeah, what a catch. He was like Superman. But the Red Sox won their first game of the season, picked up their first win. They went 11-3. In Anaheim, Mike Trout did Mike Trout stuff.
The pitch, and there's a bomb that is hit way deep down the left field side, and that one is Trout of here. Mike Trout's first home run of the season, and it was a towering drive right down that left field line. Angels get on the scoreboard. First hit given up tonight by Garcia. It's now 4-1 Astros.
But last night, the most impactful moment of 2021 may have come in the Padres game. Fernando Tatis Jr. at the plate. This is what happened.
Swing and a miss, and Tatis hurts himself on the swing. Fernando goes down after strike three and appears to be clutching his arm.
That was Don Arcillo on the Padres television network. Yeah, he fell down in a heap in front of home plate. We heard in spring training how he'd been having some discomfort with that left shoulder. Well, the Padres later acknowledged what they probably have known all along, that he has a left shoulder subluxation, which is a partial dislocation of a joint. He will be reevaluated Tuesday. We'll be talking with Jessica about that. Now, before we get to that, just want to tell you, baseball's back, and so are your favorite teams and players. Catch the best of the bigs all season on ESPN Plus with more than 170 MLB games live featuring every star and every team in the league. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com/baseball. And the fantasy baseball season is underway. That means fantasy-focused baseball with Eric and Tristan is a must-listen for all fantasy baseball managers. Follow fantasy-focused baseball wherever you get your podcast.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you got to check out NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease, plus it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious, beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting preventive.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Jessica Mendoza is a game analyst for ESPN. And Jess, I'm sure that although you did not do the Padres game last night, that you had the reaction of a lot of the same reaction a lot of people around baseball when Fernando Tatis Jr. fell in a heap in front of home plate.
Absolutely. I mean, it's one of the great game's best. You could argue also the most exciting and talked about player coming into the season. And probably, to be perfectly honest, the same reaction I had when Shohei Ohtani did similarly, you know, when he crumbled down in that Sunday night baseball game that you did. Obviously, he's fine now. But in that moment, in those moments, you're like, no. Like, I mean, the game needs the stars. And when you see an injury like that or a potential, it really scares you. And it does for any player, but especially for those that are talked about the most.
Yeah. And my experience is, and just in the time I've covered baseball, is that a lot of players have part of the reason why Fernando Tatis Jr. is so good is because he has this amazing athletic body and there's a flexibility there. And I'll never forget Dr. James Andrews once telling me that when pitchers pitch, some of them, they're so flexible with their shoulders that they're A, effectively double jointed, and B, they have effectively sublux their shoulders every time they throw a baseball. And so it's not unusual for players to have this issue, but for a hitter, a front shoulder issue, a right-handed hitter and a left shoulder issue, that just makes me cringe. And I do worry about him moving forward.
Absolutely. I mean, especially you look at, I was watching it again, and just the thought of how violent he can be with his swing, just the power that he provides. And you think about that front shoulder is all about the deceleration. So that's your brakes on, like, you're talking about the like best sports car ever, right? And your brakes is that left shoulder. So everything that's able to slow down the power, the force, everything that's providing into that swing that is Fernando Tatis Jr., that left shoulder is decelerating all of that. And at the end is where it's like the brakes just come off. It completely subluxed, and even though you don't see all of it, it definitely makes you cringe because the immediate him falling to his knees right away.
And I got texts last night from folks with other teams who, obviously like the player, love watching him play. Everyone in baseball does. But the texts were 14-year deal, not a good idea.
I think, honestly, I love that the sport can have the stars and the great players stay with one team, you know, potentially because of these huge extensions now that we're seeing so many of them. That's the upside. But the downside is if I'm someone with that kind of money, which I'm not, I mean, the odds are against you. And I was actually thinking about this yesterday when before we were coming on air, we were having the conversation. It's like, if we list all of the extensions and look even 5 years from now, 7 years from now, and see how many of these, and then obviously 10 years from now, in this case, 14 years from now, how many of these have paid off? How many of these have been, okay, the value? I mean, you look at Albert Pujols, you see a lot of, contracts that are just enormous. And at the end of them, it's like, this probably wasn't worth the amount of money, even though the player is so great and there's no doubt about it. There's just so much risk involved. And the odds are definitely against you, especially with the amount of extensions we're seeing.
And the context is so different from team to team. Like, for example, the Mets formally announced the Lindor contract yesterday, $341 million over 10 years. And you know what? If something like this happened to Lindor, Mets would be fine because they get the richest owner in baseball. They're in a big market. You do wonder, imagine a team like the Cleveland Indians having an injury like this. Now, we've seen the Padres under Peter Seidler basically just say, you know what, we're not going to worry about budgets. We're not going to worry about, whether or not this fits our market size. Peter Seidler's made up his mind. He wants to have a good baseball team, much in the way that Mike Ilitch did. But for a small market team like the Indians, investing that kind of money in Lindor and seeing an injury like this would be enormous. All right, I want to ask you about the All-Star game. We reported last night that it is being moved to Colorado. And I want to set aside the whole question of the change in the voting law and the issue of whether that's right or wrong, because that's a discussion, a rabbit hole we can go down. I thought, Jess, all along that for Major League Baseball, this was an absolute train wreck that you could see potentially on the horizon, especially with their players, that if they had left the game in Atlanta, in the state of Georgia, given all the attention that is on this issue right now, we could have gotten to late June, All-Star teams would have been announced, and then some player may have announced, I'm not participating, I'm boycotting the game. And then it would have been like dominoes. And then you would have had a lot of players potentially backing out. And what an absolute mess that would have been for Major League Baseball. And while, they can, because they moved the game, they can say, well, this is what we believe to be the right thing. I think this was more about practical realities where them, for a change, actually being proactive, seeing this potential problem on the horizon, saying we are going to veer around that. What do you think?
100%. I mean, that's why I think initially I was shocked, because I wasn't thinking about, I was thinking strictly political. And I was like, for Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball to take a political stance is just, it's unprecedented. And I was blown away by that. But then as I started to think more, and then Rob's own words, and I think they were very truthful in the fact that there would have been more attention, more of a nightmare, more of a decision then to make. Now, let's say half the players have boycotted and said, we will not play. How is Major League Baseball even having this game? This decision would have come right back around, but instead of it being his now, which isn't, even though it got media attention, it's not the biggest story out there. It would have been massive come this summer, and would have been a forced decision from the players, from the media, from everyone screaming loud. Especially, you think about it, Buster, in the summer when, pretty much all sports have come to a halt except for Major League Baseball. And so all eyes then turn to the All-Star game. And now you have the stars possibly, potentially saying they're going to sit out. And then Rob's back is against the wall. And at that point, you're canceling. There is no, hey, we're moving to Denver. Hey, Denver, can you guys host this thing in a couple weeks? That's not an option as it is. I mean, this is an event that takes a year and a half, 2 years plus of planning. And now you're asking Denver to be able to rally do everything that they possibly can in COVID to be able to prepare for this. And I don't think it would have been an option if their backs were against the wall once players decided to boycott.
I also think that this is a recognition by Central Baseball of the change in the culture. And I mentioned it was interesting the other day. I tweeted out about this, about the possibility that players would have boycotted the All-Star game in Atlanta. And there were folks on social media saying, oh, that never would have happened. And I was like, oh, yeah, it would have. And on top of that, I think after George Floyd last year, all these teams held these conference calls and there were conversations among players. And I think that this year would have been the year where reflexively, if, you know, one African-American star had come out and said, I'm not playing, then you would have seen white teammates basically say, I'm right there with you. I think about that, you know, the first call that took place within the Dodgers organization, which was arranged by Clayton Kershaw. And they listened to the stories of George Lombard and from Mookie Betts and other players. I think the reflex is changing in baseball where teammates are saying, I'm backing my guy here and I wouldn't have played, which is why I think a lot of players would have backed out.
Well, we never heard, especially if you're, you know, talking about Black players. I mean, we haven't heard their voices like we've heard them this last year. I mean, the sport of baseball, of all sports, professional sports, I feel like just stays away. You know, there's just this sense of, you know, put your head down and play the game. And, you know, you don't speak out a lot about, you know, civil rights. You don't speak out a lot about, you know, human rights, you know, politics, God forbid, you know, never mention it. And even, I mean, you know this, Buster, like when we're in the clubhouse and we're having more like private conversations with players, you can tell there's that sense of, yeah, well, you know, it's changed in a big way. And I love it just because you're hearing the whole side of who these players are. It's not just Mookie Betts, the right fielder, the all-star, the amazing athlete, but it's also somebody that grew up and has a story and has a real passion, you know, for what is happening in the world right now. And that's not just going to go away because 2020 went away. I feel like these players have been empowered to really feel like not only can they speak out, but that their teammates, to your point, the organizations, at least publicly, have to support them. And that the sport is not going to turn against those that want to speak out, but they're rather going to support them.
100%. All right, let's talk about the Angels. I think you and I are now officially the drivers of the Angels bandwagon. This is Shohei Ohtani. We saw what happened on Sunday night. He threw 101 miles per hour. He hit a 115 mile per hour home run, but then he fell down in a heap after Jose Abreu slid into him on a play at the plate, and everyone was worried about whether or not he'd be okay. Well, last night, he was inserted into the game as a pinch hitter in the late innings, and this is what happened.
Got it.
Shohei took a long look out to Smith. I mean, a long look.
And a long look.
Yeah, and so leave it to me to pick out the highlight where it actually doesn't say what happened. He was hit by a pitch by Joe Smith, and he stared out at the mound because, as I've heard from hitters through the years, it hurts when you get hit by a pitch baseball. And then
crazy.
After that, he was at third base, and this is what happened.
Taylor deals it. Walsh, bouncing ball, diving stop. They're coming home with it. Save at the plate.
Yep, the Angels come back again. Ohtani scoring the go-ahead run with his slide across home plate. I love everything about this. Jared Walsh, who looks so good for the Angels. Ohtani coming back the day after he gets knocked down. You know, Joe Maddon has said, look, we're just going to ask him every day, how do you feel? He apparently said he was good to go, and he helped him win a ball game yesterday.
They're going to trust him, too. I mean, that's the thing is you can ask, right? But there's, when I saw him sliding in the home plate, and you know, I'm West Coast, so I'm staying up late watching this game, and I'm excited to watch this team because you have Jared Walsh, who was the hero of the Sunday night game, you know, with the walk off, and then he hits this ball over 100 miles an hour. Yuri Gurriel makes this fantastic play and then has to make a perfect throw, can't do it. Ohtani comes sliding in, and just, you could feel it's one day five this season, and you could just feel the electricity within this team and the excitement. And I really believe taking the training wheels off, saying you're a ball player all around. And what happens with ball players is there's that risk. Yes, that they're going to get hurt on any given moment. Look at Fernando Tatis Jr. We get it. But by sitting here and putting bubble wrap around you, you're not playing your game. And I know it's a simple slide home to score a run, that goes ahead, but it's what you're going to see from Shohei. And he could get hurt tomorrow. I get it. But at least he's able to play his game and to do it in the way that we all did, right? When you're a kid, you pitch, you hit, you play defense. That's what you do. But when you get to the major leagues, there's like one player that can actually do all of it, maybe five. But Shohei Ohtani is the example that I think moving forward, it's going to set a standard. We're all going to look back on this, Buster, and say, remember when Joe Maddon and the Angels made the decision with Shohei Ohtani to allow him to do it all the time. And then the standard that set moving forward, and look at all the players that have come after that, not maybe hundreds, but definitely dozens, to be able to play, hit, and pitch with success.
And I just love the emotion he's playing with. It feels like that part of him has been unwrapped too. I love listening as I was broadcasting the game on Sunday night, hearing the sound of him screaming after making these great pitches on the mound. That was really cool. All right, this is a rapid fire portion of this. Give me 30 seconds on each of these topics. Steve Matz, terrific start for the Blue Jays.
Look out, Blue Jays. I mean, that's what I saw, because this team could hit. Blue Jays, we know it. I mean, I don't need to tell you all the freaking offensive power that they have, but they've struggled to pitch after Hyunjin Ryu. So to see the performance that Steven Matz, now he's been inconsistent in the past, he's been injured. If he can stay healthy, this team with their pitching now, like being able to add to that, look out for them in the AL East.
Last night, Jacob DeGrom lived in the 100 to 102 mile per hour neighborhood. And yet, after six scoreless, completely dominant innings, the Mets lose. A great stat was sent out this morning by Ryan Spader that in his victories over the last three seasons, DeGrom has an ERA of 1.11 in the games he did not get the win, 2.58, 0-19. I felt so bad for him.
Well, yes, again, and I know at this point, it's like an old story of him not getting the win. I felt bad for Mets fans when he came out of that game. And I think a part of it was because Luis Rojas before the game said he could go to 100 pitches, that he's been stretched out, that it's fine. And then I think it was at 77 and he's just dominating. I think the last pitch he threw before he came out was 102. It was ridiculous. And I get it, it's early. And so like, I'm not going to sit here and argue that, you know, he came out, but in that moment, it hurt. Like you could feel just for the game, like, oh, but you said he could stay longer. It's like, you said we could stay and play until midnight. And now like you're telling me we got to come home early. And you could just kind of feel the energy of that team shift. And they end up losing that game. And it's a story that's continually told of, you know, Met that DeGrom putting out this ridiculous performance, but still not getting the win.
Give me 30 seconds on this. You agree with me that the mush ball is in play in 2021. And I looked at that Pete Alonso swing last night and just laughed that it died at the warning track.
I want to give it a few more months, but I agree. I'm just curious, like if part of that is just early season and guys just not being able to connect the way they normally can. I laughed because Pete Alonso, when he connects, it's usually got nowhere to go but out. But I've had games where, you know, I was in Colorado last week, so balls were already flying. So that's not a fair assessment. And then I had the Indians line up yesterday. So it's hard to really assess because they weren't hitting a lot of balls hard anyway.
And they played the Royals. You and I agree. The Royals are better than advertised.
They are my surprise team of this year. And doesn't mean they're going to go and win the AL or even win their division, but people still have them at the bottom of the Central. And this is a team because they're going to pitch. We know they're going to pitch. That's what they've been doing. But their lineup has been so good and deep. And right now, it doesn't even have two of their stars in Adalberto Mondesi and Hunter Dozier. Both those guys are out of the lineup with injuries, and yet they are still, by the way, they put up 25 runs in the first two games of the season. I get it. What does that mean? But it hasn't happened in 40 years. It's not something they're going to continue to do, but it's showing off the fact that not only do they have really great hitters, adding Carlos Santana, I mean, just so many, you know, Whit Merrifield at the top, but they also are going to have depth when they have injuries like we're seeing right now.
All right, Jess, good to talk with you.
Awesome, Buster.
We're driven by the search for better. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, you and I were texting back and forth yesterday. I wound up tweeting out, with your help, some information about Francisco Lindor's contract, which is which I find really interesting. Before I dive into that, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. It's so exciting. What are we? Today is day six of the season. It feels like we're already like 100 days in. It's awesome.
I know. We're drawing conclusions, and I'm going to be asking you whether or not you want to draw a conclusion later in our segment here. But first, talking about Francisco Lindor's contract, it was interesting, but just in talking with a couple of people yesterday, that Lindor, between his salary for this year, which is $22.3 million, and his signing bonus of $21 million, which is paid out this month. This is not a signing bonus, which is paid out during the, you know, the length of the contract. He gets all $21 million before the month of April. He's got $43.3 million in compensation for this year, which you and I determined that's the highest in baseball history for any player for 1 year.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. First of all, I mean, what a contract structure. I mean, that just blew me away because I feel like we think about sports and not even just baseball contracts, and the signing bonus always seems to be spread out over a couple of years. So I was so interested to hear that. But, you know, we spent all offseason talking about Trevor Bauer. Is he going to get the $40 million average annual value? And we had our eyes on the 4-0 for that reason. But based on how everything is going out, and you mentioned deferrals when we were talking yesterday, it's going to be Francisco Lindor. Now, I will say that the payout of signing bonuses is not as well tracked as overall salaries are, but I did my best looking through the last 2 years. And as we know with contracts, how they've, you know, gone up, especially ballooned in the last, you know, maybe 5 to 10 years, there's really nobody else who I found who could have really come close to this kind of number in a single year. So it's really interesting. And I wonder how it'll be listed moving forward, but that's really just for me and research wise.
Well, and I think it's a nice job by his agent, David Meter, that he got him this signing bonus in the year leading up to this looming labor issue. Like, if I'm an agent, I'd want to get my player some money before we hit this labor thing, because no one really has an idea of what's coming out next year.
Absolutely. I mean, we just don't know with the CBA being up and everything else. And it's just really interesting because it was already a great deal for the player and for the team, you know, but really great deal for the player with the $341 million starting in 2022 and everything else. But it's interesting because, you know, with these extensions that kick in the next year, you're not usually looking at that year that he is signing it necessarily, kind of like Mookie Betts deal didn't kick in until for this year, I believe. But instead, he's getting this huge payout to start it. And as you said, the years and the timing certainly can't be an accident.
All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
Number three is 100. So Jacob deGrom threw 1,100 mile an hour pitches last night. He's now thrown 4,400 mile an hour pitches in the last two seasons, which is 31 more than the next starting pitcher on the list. And the next starting pitcher on the list is Sixto Sanchez, who we don't exactly know when he's even going to be pitching this year. So just to, you know, further prove the point that he's got quite a hefty lead there. And it was, I mean, I think at this point we can call that a classic DeGrom game all around. He became the first pitcher in Mets history to get the team's first hit of the season, which I thought was a really funny note. He ended up with two hits on the night and an RBI. But of course, we saw what happened with the bullpen. We saw, as we've seen many times, Jacob DeGrom leaving with a lead, the team going on to lose the game. So it's the eighth time since 2018 that he had a six or more inning scoreless start where he ended up getting a no decision. And that's two more than any other pitcher in that span. And the Mets have actually lost five games where he had at least a six inning scoreless start since 2018, which is tied for the most in the majors. And the most common reaction to that when I put that out on Twitter last night was like, really, only five? Because I think we know what this feels like, and it certainly felt like that again last night.
Number two
is five. So last night was the fifth time that Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton homered in the same game in the regular season as teammates. Three of those were in 2018, April 4th, June 6th, and July 4th, and then once in a doubleheader last year, but they both homered in the same game, the first game of the doubleheader. They've also done it in three postseason games. So there's a couple ways to look at this, but certainly it's encouraging for the Yankees offense. And this just gets to the point of when they made that trade in December 2017 to get Giancarlo Stanton, everyone was thinking, oh my goodness, how many times are we going to see Judge and Stanton go yard in the same game? And it really hasn't happened that much because of health, and these guys haven't been on the field. So that's got to be encouraging for the Yankees. And hopefully we see a ton of that this season.
Number one
is eight. So the A's are the third team since at least 1901 to allow eight or more runs in each of their first five games of a season. And I mean, you know, eight feels a little arbitrary maybe, but that's a lot of runs to be giving up. So the only other teams to do that in each of their first five games of a season were the 1995 White Sox and 1974 Padres. And it's been a little surprising to me. I had the Astros winning this division, but I expected the A's to be better than they've looked. And I still think they could look a bit better, but the pitching has been a huge concern.
Yeah, and you led perfectly into the question that I was going to ask you, which is, do you think Oakland's in trouble? Because I do. I thought, you know, during the offseason, when they lose Liam Hendricks and they lose Marcus Semien, you know, an important leader in their clubhouse, and their everyday shortstop. And look, people like Elvis Andrus, but it's not like he's a player who's on the rise. And so I really feel like, you know, while they're going back, I'm also, as I told you during spring training, I'm buying into the Angels hype.
Definitely. And we've seen the Angels look good. I mean, both they and the Astros are now 4-1, but I agree, it's with you. I mean, I expected the issues with the A's to be coming more from not having Semien and not having Hendricks, but I think these starting pitching issues and just like across the board pitching issues have been really magnified. I mean, they have the worst run differential in the majors right now by many runs. Minus 33 is their run differential. The only other teams with a negative double digit run differential are minus 11. So that's significantly worse than everybody else. And obviously these high scoring games, the Astros scored a ton of runs off of them, and then they gave up a bunch of runs last night to the Dodgers too. But I mean, it feels like the A's have been this team the last few years that you don't necessarily always expect. And then, hey, they're always kind of there by the end of the season, or they're the wild card or whatever else. But I'm not sure that can continue this year based on not just how they've looked, but if you really take a look at that roster, how they've looked has meant.
And I think you'd agree with me also that historically it feels like that when we get to about May 30th, that's when Oakland puts everything together and they take off. Like, I don't know the exact numbers, but I'd almost be willing to bet the family farm back in Vermont that over the last 25 years, the best record in baseball after May 30th, probably in the top five, Oakland. Because it just seems like every year when we get to Memorial Day, that's when they sort of figure things out. They, you know, maybe address some of the weaker spots in their roster, and then they make changes. All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Marley Rivera covers baseball for ESPN, and that means tonight being part of our coverage, Phillies and the Mets from Philadelphia. Marley, how are you doing today?
Doing well this morning, Buster. Looking forward to our broadcast tonight.
Yeah. So as part of that preparation for you, you were at the ballpark last night. I was talking with Jessica Mendoza about my perception after being in the game in Anaheim over the weekend and then watching that game last night. I'm like, yeah, that we can call it the mush ball. We can call it the pillow ball, whatever we want to call it. But 2021, there's no doubt in my mind the baseball is different just because of swings you saw, like with Pete Alonso last night in the ninth inning, were off the bat. You know, given a guy as strong as Alonso, you're like, that ball's gone. And instead it dies at the warning track.
Absolutely. And it was dead down the middle in his heat zone. So it was really, I mean, when we heard it off the bat immediately, and I know this is going to sound like a funny reaction for your listeners out there, but like as a media member who's writing a newser, you're like, oh Lord, I have to alternate, you know, control, alt, delete and rewrite this entire story. And then when you saw that it, you know, died just short of the wall, it was quite surprising. I've been kind of mixed about the ball. And one of the guys told me that he thinks they're mixing them in, which I thought was kind of funny. And I obviously have no evidence of that. This is just a player saying this because I've seen it. You know, we saw that home run by Stanton last night. I saw it in replay. And obviously that was a no-doubter. But then things like what happened to Alonso, what happened to several times to, you know, guys like Aaron Judge, guys with power and the ball dying. I mean, surely it must have changed.
Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind. And it'd be funny to see if some pitchers really do believe that all they've done is mix in the balls. You can imagine there's going to be scenes where like, I'm going to throw that one out. Okay, throw me another one. Okay, I'm going to throw that one out.
They're going to become experts at just holding the ball in their hands and knowing how tight the seams are.
Right. And exactly. Because the pitchers are going to want the pillow balls. You being at the ballparks, I got to tell you, you know, I got to go to the Angels and White Sox game on Sunday and I walked down on the concourse and I got to smell the smells of the ballpark that we're normally used to, the hot dogs, the popcorn, that whole thing. How cool is it to be back at ballparks?
It's outstanding. I mean, obviously, we had a little bit of a taste of it in the spring with 1,000, 1,500 fans. I wasn't there when they had, the games in Texas in the playoffs last year. So my first taste of it was in the spring, but it doesn't compare, right, to the 20%, 25% capacity. Yankee Stadium on opening day, it was just really incredible to get that energy again. And last night, particularly at Citizens Bank Park, during that eighth inning when the Phillies kept scoring those runs against the Mets bullpen, and it was something called opening night because it was the first night game at Citizens Bank Park. So all the fans received a shirt giveaway. So they started, you know, moving them in the air, and it just really was really exciting to finally see them. And one of the eeriest things that happened last year in that, you know, kind of terrible 60-game season was the fact that they would still play Take Me Out to the ball game to an entirely silent ballpark. And that was one of the hardest things as a media member to be in the press box, you know, for, because obviously the ballpark was silent. So the moment they play Take Me Out to the ball game and the fans are singing along, it just really feels like baseball is almost back.
I was watching your Twitter feed yesterday, and I noticed that it definitely has stuck in your craw that already fans at Yankee Stadium are booing Giancarlo Stanton. I get the feeling it's a little bit like it felt like with Alex Rodriguez. There were years when it became almost sport. Like no matter what happens, they're going to boo Alex, even in Yankee Stadium. And it feels that way with Stanton.
Absolutely. I mean, I was obviously there for opening day and the second game, and Stanton did not have a good performance. But you can always tell who the targets are because Aaron Hicks struck out three times in consecutive games. And he didn't hear a single boo. But Giancarlo Stanton, you know, if he even, you know, hit a pop-up to right field, it would definitely automatically boo. And what was amazing to me is not only that he got booed, that Aaron Judge, who hit a home run earlier in the game, got booed when he did not come through in a situation where the Yankees were leading 7-0. So Buster, I'm kind of confused here, like of the expectations that the fans may have on game 4 of the Yankee season and against the Baltimore Orioles. So it really is getting kind of confusing. They were really looking forward to being at the ballpark, and apparently part of this was some booing. I can't wait till the Astros get to Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, in some respects, it's gotten to the point where I wonder if it makes it easier for Stanton. It should, because it's clearly not personal. I've seen Mariano Rivera booed in Yankee Stadium. I've seen Derek Jeter booed in Yankee Stadium.
Absolutely. I mean, when you have a name for it, right, like as you well know, Buster, being at Yankee Stadium so many times, you know, in your career, being, you know, the Bronx tier. I mean, when you know that you have the bronze tier there, it's really kind of interesting. And I agree with you. And one thing, you know Giancarlo Stanton well. And one thing is, it doesn't faze him. That is something that people really need to know. Giancarlo Stanton is just doing his thing. He's locked in. And, you know, what's amazing is that we always talk about that Yankee moment. You know, the first one that comes to mind, obviously, is Aaron Boone. And that once you have your Yankee moment, the booing doesn't happen. That is definitely not going to happen to Giancarlo Stanton. It's just going to continue.
I wonder if your reaction to seeing Tatis Jr. rolling around in pain last night was the same as mine. When you saw that, what did you think?
Well, I just came back from the ballpark, right? And I'm watching the highlights later on, you know, after working last night. And when I saw that, it reminded me of Mason Williams, who used to be an outfielder for the Yankees. I actually don't even know where Mason is right now. And he had a shoulder that was prone to dislocation. And we always talked to him about it. And he said, well, I'm double jointed and it's a little bit easier for me, but he would still be out months at a time because of the pain. It just broke my heart to see, you know, one of the most shining stars in the game and one of the most exciting, you know, one of the must watch TV, you know, young kids in this game get hurt that way. And I'm just so concerned because we know that with dislocations, some people are prone to them and can handle them and come back very quickly. And some other people, it can, you know, it can involve torn ligaments and tendons. And I sure hope that that is not Tatis Jr.'s experience, because what a loss it would be for all of us in baseball as we come back and try to get back to normal and don't get to see Fernando Tatis this year.
I agree. That's exactly what I was thinking too. All right, Marley, have fun tonight with the broadcast. It'll be great.
Thank you, Buster. And then remember, don't ever ask Clint Frazier if he is a good left fielder.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Tuesday. First up, we have Royals_Chiefs. At Royals_Chiefs 25, he writes, and why are the Royals not getting any love nationally? 25 runs in the first two games. Can't be all about competition. Michael Taylor has dominated along with the rest of the lineup. Bullpen has been lights out as projected, striking 41% of batters faced at the time of this tweet. And I would just say, sir, we are not ignoring your team five games into the season. What do you say, Buster?
Yeah, and we actually, and we've talked about the Royals, and I know I do radio in Kansas City every week, and I've talked about how I think that, you know, I'm really hopeful for them in terms of how they're going to be. We had Lynn Worthy on it to give a Royals preview, and we talked about that. It's a fair point about Michael Taylor. It seems like he's simplified his swing. He looks good. They look good out of the gates, and we just talked about them with Jess, so come on.
Next up, we have Blue Jay Josh at Josh Stay. He writes, and hey, Buster, basketball is the triple double and hockey has the Gordie Howe hat trick. What would be the equivalent in baseball? I think hat trick is appropriate for a three home run or three RBI game.
Yeah, you could say that. But I got to say, while it might be a positive in basketball and hockey, in baseball, a hat trick always among players is a conversation about strikeouts for hitters getting the hat trick. Right.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have the reference to strikeouts in one game for one player with the golden sombrero.
Last one for today, Bill Craig at Bill Craig MN writes in, hey, Buster, Dobnak was given a save in the Twins game today. How is that possible? He inherited a 14-run lead. No Major League Baseball team has ever lost a 14-run lead, and he didn't pitch effectively. He gave up 5 runs.
Yeah, and I didn't go back in to look in the box score, but when I saw your question, Bill, I assume he threw at least 3 innings. If a reliever comes in with a lead and throws at least 3 innings, they're credited with a save. Now, your point is well taken. He certainly, and knowing Dobnak, I mean, he would be the first one to tell you that he was not effective. But according to the rule, and it's not a great loophole, you get a save if you inherit a lead and you throw at least 3 innings.
All right. That does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Jess, Sarah, Marley, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we have to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.